the Kingdom of Knives is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Good morning. It's a wild night, folks. Hour number one, Peter Davenport at the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, and I'm getting absolutely blitzed with calls. We're getting sightings all over the continental United States in some specific areas. Here's just one of many. Please stop faxing me. Stop faxing me. I know it's going on everywhere. Dear Art, tonight at about 9 o'clock p.m. in Eugene, Oregon, while walking home, we saw, this is Adam, Joe, Mike, and Abram together, a brilliant greenish shade of light streak through the sky, traveling as fast as a shooting star. It was immensely larger than any shooting star we've ever encountered. We appreciate your time. Like to give your West of the Rockies phone number out more often. Well, I'll try. We're going to get a very quick update from Peter Davenport in Seattle. It's a wild night out there, folks. And then back to Joe McGonigal. Peter, what's going on?
Yeah, we've been getting as many calls as you've been getting, apparently, Art. Since I was last on the air just an hour ago, we've received probably two dozen calls. Some of them are really interesting. Just got a call from a trucker. I think he called from Winslow, Arizona. They were traveling to the east on I-40, saw some very peculiar flashing lights off to their left. I presume that means off to the north where they were on the highway. But intriguingly, we took a call from a very serious-minded sounding woman down in Kerrville, Texas. Apparently, she saw something that is reminiscent of what was Dallas this evening.
Of what they saw in Dallas?
Yeah. And we also took a report from a gentleman down in Oregon who's a green ball of light as well.
You're getting calls right now.
Yeah, I failed to block out the call waiting.
Do you have any sense yet from the calls you've taken of how massive this is?
No, it's hard to say because we don't know how far away it was yet. That underscores the value of our getting written reports with maps. If people will send us an official roadmap, photocopy of a roadmap, on which they indicate, one, where they were standing at the time of their sighting, number two, a straight line pointing in the direction they estimate they were looking. When we get those maps, we can then estimate where the object was. It could have been a mile away from them. It could have been 100 miles away from them.
Well, you've got a lot of reports to do and a lot of correlating to do.
We sure do.
But one thing's for sure, something's going on tonight.
Yeah. That certainly appears to be the case from our vantage point. And it's not just tonight. From my perspective, Art, it appears to be a continuation of what's been going on for the last 10 days or 2 weeks, approximately. Daytime sightings. Of course, I played the tape from Vancouver today, 2 o'clock today. The sighting over Westboro, Massachusetts. We've been getting sightings all day, reported to us all day long. Of course, we have yet to receive the written reports on these. The written report can change a lot of things, but it is clear that there are a lot of strange events that are being seen, allegedly, by people and reported to us.
All right. Well, one more time with your reporting number, please. And then
yes. Our telephone number in Seattle is area code 206-722-3000. Although we're about to shut down for the night, I've been working all day and all night, and I'm going to take a break. The best way for people to send us a brief one-paragraph description of what they saw is on the Internet, and my email address is simply director@ufocenter.com, or they can send a report over our standardized report on our website, and that's www.ufocenter.com.
Thank you, Peter, and we'll talk to you tomorrow night and get an assessment of all this.
Thanks a lot, Art.
Take care. That's Peter Davenport at the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, and as I say, it's a hot night. There's a lot going on out there. So, if you're so inclined, keep your eyes peeled. All right. Listen, we're about to go back to Joe McGonigal. Very quickly, though, An announcement. It is my understanding, and it is my great pleasure to announce that KABC in Los Angeles, beginning tomorrow night, is going to carry the program in its entirety, beginning at 10 o'clock at night. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think that I am. Yeah, again, it's my understanding that KABC in Los Angeles has made the decision to begin carrying the program at its inception at 10 p.m. Pacific time, starting tomorrow night. I know that affects a lot of people in Los Angeles. Back now to Joe McGonigal. Joe is the nation's first military remote viewer. He still can't talk about most of what he did for the military. In fact, 99.9% he can't talk about. But we can talk generally about remote viewing. And he wrote a book called The Ultimate Time Machine. And Joe, it is your view that time, as in going into the future, for example, you could remote view an event and then with free will change that event, in effect changing the future, correct?
Well, actually, in that simple phrase that you just said, there's probably about five things that I could say.
Go ahead and say them.
Okay. One of the difficulties about remote viewing the future, or one of the glitches in remote viewing the future, can best be demonstrated by example. Suppose, as an example, that we were living in the year 1850, and we actually remote viewed a pump laser in operation in Silicon Valley in 1975. You could have a perfect, 100% correct remote viewing of that event, but you wouldn't understand it. In other words, the conceptualization or the concepts that drive pump lasers don't exist yet. So going out into the future, just a few years in some cases, depending on the target, can present us with unsoluble problems in terms of determining what it is we're seeing. Having said that, when you remote view the future, if you see an event A, as an example, and you record that, the fact that A doesn't happen just simply means that you were wrong. In other words, you can have all the conjecture you'd like about whether or not our actions between that remote viewing and the event actually occurring somehow changed that event, but that's all hypothetical. In reality, we can only state what we experience, and that is we did not experience A, so it in fact was a bad remote viewing, or an incorrect remote viewing, you say?
I do see. It's my understanding from having talked to other remote viewers that very large events are more easily viewed. For example, if your target was a certain individual, if they were about to die in a car crash or be hit by an 18-wheeler, something very, very eventful and traumatic, if not fatal, that would stand out and be more easily remote viewed than lesser events.
Well, that's partially right. Based purely on an objective observation, one would naturally say that. In all probability, from a scientific standpoint, what's probably occurring is even a little bit more complex. Remote viewing targets that have a higher entropy than other targets generally produce more information and more accurate information. What that means is that lower entropy targets, which are generally targets that don't have much happening within them, usually do not produce as much information or as much accurate information. So it really doesn't have anything to do with the significance of the event, but it has more to do with its content from an entropy standpoint.
If you can change an outcome that has been viewed in the future, then an obvious question is with regard to the past. You can only view the past, or can you affect, is there any way to actually affect the past?
Well, I personally think that every remote viewing of the past affects the past.
And really?
The reason I say that is because, as I said earlier, I think the past is purely a creation of the specific geopolitical, theological scenario in which we happen to be living. In other words, what we believe today about the past is different from what we believed in 1890. So by remote viewing the past and making comments on it, we are adding information or belief structure to what is already known or believed to be known, and that has to modify the view in terms of how people think or feel about the past, depending on how much they believe in the remote viewing, of course.
Okay. A straight-on hard question. Remote viewing is one thing. There are people who talk about remote influencing, which is quite another animal.
Mm-hmm.
Is remote influencing possible?
It is if it's demonstrated within certain parameters. Generally speaking, where you see or observe remote influencing is where the target individuals or the individuals involved as the target generally have agreed by inference to being influenced. In other words, if you have someone that you bring into an experiment, you say you're going to remote influence them in some way, by virtue of the fact that they've agreed to participate in the experiment, they've given sort of an agreement or compliance to being influenced. I think you'll see influence occur then. But in cases where someone does not give that sort of tacit approval, I have never seen remote influencing actually taking place.
All right. I'm going to really take you out on a limb now and explain to you something I've done and at least get your comments on it. I'm really thoughtful on what I have done. I decided to play a couple of years ago and to experiment. Actually, 95 I began. And I said, look, if there are really these UFOs, and if they are from elsewhere, or whatever they are, let's try a mass concentration to merely have these craft show themselves over a large American city. And I had millions of people going into deep concentration to get that done. 2 weeks later, the lights over Phoenix occurred. Then we tried it a second time, and there were massive sightings within a couple of days over Las Vegas. Then more recently, in the last year, I have done three separate experiments to attempt to control the weather, each one of them successful. One time in Florida to bring rains to put out fires. Within hours, clouds formed with no forecast for them, and it rained like hell. Another time in Texas, where they desperately needed rain, and we tried it, and by God, they got rain in the exact area we asked for. And the third time, in Alberta, in a province of Canada, where they were having fires, and again, we produced rain. At that point, I stopped, and I began to sort of scare myself, and I said to my audience, look, it would appear that something real is happening here, but I'm concerned about the consequences of experimenting in these areas. For example, people urged me to try to have mass concentrations to deter a hurricane from hitting the coast. Well, that scared me. I imagined all kinds of terrible possibilities, like somehow managing to hold a hurricane over water and away from land long enough to build from a category 2 to 5, and then having it slam into land. In other words, it seems like what I was doing, and I wasn't doing it, it was the millions of people, I was just sort of an orchestra director here, was working. And it sort of freaked me out. And so I have not yet done another experiment, but I've been very thoughtful about it. What do you think about millions of minds in intense concentration over events of that sort?
Well, first, I need to say that there's a very real possibility that something's going on there, that you are having that kind of influence.
Yeah.
But then secondarily, I'd have to say that there's another response that's possible, in that you're taking sort of the key role in orchestrating when millions of people, millions of minds will be concentrating on a specific thing.
Right.
You may, in fact, be psychically picking the precise time and moment in time-space to observe the result. there's a very good example of this in a remote influence experiment that was done by the Russians that I could, you know, I could give as an example if you want to hear it.
I do want to hear it. Are you aware that the Russians contacted Malaysia and made an offer to create a cyclone? And they would do it for free if the Malaysians gave their... You remember when the terrible fires were going on?
Right, I remember that.
They made it. It was in going on, being reported by the Associated Press. The Russians actually said, "We have," they said, "the technology to create a cyclone. Would you like us to do it?" And I'm still not over that piece of news.
Well, there's some interesting technology that's been developed just very recently with regard to observing certain patterns in, as an example, the effects of the contrails of jets and how many days later and many thousands of miles away they actually create storms.
That's correct.
So it may be that there are scientists that are very far along that track, and that might have something to do with it. It might also be that it would have been nice to have the opportunity to predict the cyclone from Malaysia and get paid a lot of money. No, for being correct psychically.
Well, actually, they offered to do it once for free, and then there would be charges for any future production.
Sure.
And I guess it didn't go anywhere, but the implication was that they could do this with satellite technology that was already in place.
That's interesting. I would have liked to see Malaysia take them up on it. That would have been fun to see.
Yeah, me too. So you don't then... toss out the idea that millions of minds in concentration over events of this sort can produce events of this sort as one possibility, the other being that I have sort of psychically simply read something that's going to occur.
Right. I would give each equal weight simply because I don't know if either's ever been proven. Both, of course, hold the same possibility. One of the things that's very difficult about proving this sort of thing is that I'm absolutely convinced, and have been for many years, that our expectancy and outcome are what we intend to have happen very much has to do with what actually does occur. What we can't determine is whether or not it occurs that way because we've influenced events in some way that cause it, or whether or not we've just in some predetermined way have selected the appropriate place to observe the event.
Do you give any more weight to either possibility?
No, I don't. Not at the moment. I just don't have enough data, and I don't think anyone does to weigh one possibility over the other.
You have even, I know, done experiments with telekinesis.
Psychokinesis.
Psychokinesis.
Right.
And that is the ability to move or in some way affect an object or a beam of light or whatever it is you choose with your mind.
Right.
Is that real?
In terms of affecting solid objects, I have been successful in being a surgical steel bar that was sealed in a glass tube.
What? You did this under controlled...
Well, it wasn't controlled to the extent that I had access to the tube alone, but it was controlled to the extent that it was in a sealed glass tube.
You bent a steel bar?
Well, it was a surgical steel implement.
Yeah,
actually.
Right. All right.
They normally don't bend. They usually shatter under pressure.
Joe, hold on. We'll obviously pick up on that when we get back. Off into a whole different world, huh, folks? What a night. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1 800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may recharge at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
The sounds of silence. The sounds of thought. Good morning, everybody. Joe McGonigal is my guest. You ought to know who he is. The first, our nation's first remote viewer, number 001 for the government, Project Stargate. A man who just said that in a controlled experiment, he bent a metal surgical instrument inside a glass jar.
And now back to the best of Art Bell.
All right, we are about to, in a moment, open the line. So if you have any questions for our nation's first remote viewer, Joe McGonigal, now is a good time to call. You know what the numbers are. And I'm going to turn him over to you in a moment. But, Joe, where did you do this? You bent a surgical instrument inside a glass jar. This was an experiment done where, under what conditions?
Well, actually, as I said earlier, and I probably wasn't clear enough about it, it unfortunately was not under control condition because I was allowed access to this glass tube without someone in the room with me. So that negates any kind of controls. You know, I could have switched glass tubes or something. But in reality, it was like a test tube, a glass test tube that had been melted shut on both ends, and contained within it was a round, probably 2 centimeter thick surgical piece of steel, about 7 inches long. And over a period of about 8 months, I was able to put about a 3.5 centimeter bend in the center of it. One of the difficulties when you start dealing with metals in PK is unless you're absolutely sure about the metal that's being targeted, it's difficult to say whether or not it would not have done that on its own in any event.
On its own? In a sealed glass jar?
Yes, that's very possible. There could be some metallurgical defect within the metal itself when it's subjected to certain changes in temperature. As an example, it could have a reaction where it seeks to change shape or go back to an original shape, particularly with metals that have been stamped or dye created in machines. That's why spoons are so controversial.
Is that what you think happened?
I think it's a little of both, actually. It's a little difficult to say. I have a nickel alloy serving spoon that's rolled up into a tight little knot, and of course that was very difficult to do, but when we attempted to unroll it, it of course shattered. So rolling it into a tight knot in the first place was sort of defied the laws of nickel alloy.
Boy, I'll say. And when you tried to undo what you had done.
Right, it shattered.
It shattered.
We tried to unwind it by force, I would add. So obviously if it was going to shatter, it would have shattered if I had rolled it by force. But in this case, it just rolled up like a sheet of paper. It was very easy to do.
How do people who observe this kind of thing happen keep full touch with reality after they've seen it happen? I mean, I'd be, hey, I'm out of here.
Well,
Joe, you're a scary guy.
The usual reaction is people go into sort of a stunned silence.
Yeah.
And then they go away, and by the next morning they've convinced themselves that it was a freak accident, and by that afternoon they never observed it. It's either integrated into their reality or deny it altogether. And most people have a tendency to deny that they've seen those things occur.
Here's just a couple of facts, and then we'll go to the phones. Dear Art, in Joe's first book, entitled Mind Trek, he drew, as well as described, his impressions of the Cydonia region of Mars. Richard Hoagland sits straight up. Would you please ask him to describe the impressions of the Cydonia region of Mars as well as his impressions of its former inhabitants?
Well, actually, within the book, I drew a picture of what I think were the former inhabitants, and they are very humanoid-like, and they probably stood about 12 feet. I have a personal conviction that the people who actually built the ruins that exist, which I believe exist in the Cydonia region, probably existed a million years ago, and in some way might even be our ancestors. In other words, there's a very real possibility that we're aliens to the planet we live on.
We are Martians.
Right, essentially. Actually, I don't think they were originally from Mars. I think they came from another area. And the ruins that now exist there were actually constructed in a rather hurriedly fashion to protect them against the sort of ravaging storms and things that covered the face of Mars back then.
Which literally ended up stripping its atmosphere and water and so forth.
Right, and perhaps part of that group were safely transported to Earth at some point, and the rest, of course, didn't make it.
You seem like a really careful, well-grounded person, as I ask you various questions, offering other more mundane possibilities for what otherwise seems to be a psychic event, and yet you seem pretty sure about this, about Cydonia, about the inhabitants.
Well, and of course, I'm saying that that's my personal conviction, which doesn't make it right. I also say in Mind Trek, where I give the actual descriptions and transcripts and whatnot taken from the session, that is, for all intents and purposes, I'm creating science fiction. Until someone actually goes and lands at Cydonia and walks in those ruins, it's an impossibility to say whether it's right or wrong.
All right, somebody writes, I'm on the East Coast, it's going on 3 o'clock in the morning here, and I've got to be to work by 8, it's killing me. Would you ask Joe, please, for any predictions or knowledge he has for the new millennium? I have talked to some remote viewers, Joe, who say there's almost a block at some point in the future as they try to look past some point.
My book, The Ultimate Time Machine, I actually talk about mostly about the next 75 years. There's approximately 160 very specific predictions with regard to date and what I believe is actually going to happen.
Oh, could you give us a few of those?
It's a little difficult to do without the manuscript in front of me, but you know, we were talking earlier about these light phenomena perhaps being a preliminary for a geological occurrence.
The things being seen all over the country tonight,
right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm almost convinced that within our lifetime we're going to see a major eruption occur somewhere on the North American continent. And I'm sort of torn between two locations, one being the Mount Shasta area, mm-hmm. and the other being Mexico City. And one of my predictions is that if it does occur in the Mexico City area, it will be, you know, quite devastating because of the intensity of the population in that area. I suspect that the one that you and I will see will probably be in the Mount Shasta area, and that sometime within the next 100 years, the one in Mexico City will occur.
Boy.
I'm a lot more specific about the dates in the book, but I just can't recall them from memory.
All right. Art, please ask Joe if a specific item like a stock price can actually be viewed for future performance, and obviously if so, then why doesn't the group simply make a few choice picks and fund any amount of research you would like to do in that particular fashion?
Well, there's a lot of ways of answering that. You can do specific stocks. You can use a form of remote viewing called associative remote viewing for binary questions like yes and no, or constructive, destructive, that sort of thing. And, of course, target a stock as to whether or not you should invest, not invest, or just leave it alone. And I would say to the listener that I don't specifically ask them about their business. So I don't generally answer in response to whether or not I'm doing stocks.
Oh, gee, a lot to read between the lines there.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, I guess I wouldn't assume that a viewer doesn't make money doing that sort of thing. I in particular, I personally don't have a great deal of an interest in the stock market because I believe it's a form of gambling, and that for everyone who makes $10 in the stock market, 10 people have to have lost a dollar, essentially.
Well, it is gambling.
Yeah,
it is. It really is gambling.
Right.
And they're presently, you know, trying to squash internet gambling. You can go on the internet now, and you can play roulette and poker and 21, whatever you want, offshore operations. And they're getting ready to ban that. And I was thinking the other day, if they're going to ban that, they probably ought to ban internet stock purchasing.
Well, there's a lot of people, Art, that are essentially giving up their homes and cars, playing the long shot on the self-invested stock market over the internet, and they're habituated to it because they have a gambling condition, and I think that is that's unconscionable, personally. But
well, you know, in our society, we're capitalists. And that's, I suppose, what it's all about, they say, but how they delineate that from real gambling. I mean, if you're going to play arbitrage, for example, that's, to me, just gambling.
Right, exactly.
And what is the difference, and how come nobody ever talks about that fact? What we are?
Well, I think part of the problem right now, the major problem in Japan, goes back to their addiction with gambling. In their stock market, it wasn't good enough to sell papers on commodities for the future. They were selling paper on the paper, and then papers on those papers, so that they were essentially gambling three layers deep on commodities that fail.
Well, that is more or less how we got in trouble with the Great Depression. Do you have any specific economic information that would be of general interest to people? In other words, do you see our economy remaining robust? Is there a deep valley problem ahead? Some sort of depression? Do you see any deep problems in our economy?
I don't see any kind of a depression like occurred in 1929, but I do see a declining market. I see a market that's probably going to go through at least four major corrections over the next 5 years. And, of course, people make money during that period as well as they make it when it's rising.
Sure.
It's just that along with that comes sort of a negative confidence in the economy. And so I think we will go through a period where people are shaken by it and disturbed by it, but it's not going to be anything like the 29 crash.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal and Art Bell. Hi, where are you? Hello?
I'm in Nashville.
Nashville. Okay, you're going to have to speak up good and loud, hon. Get close to the phone and yell at us.
Okay, is that better?
Much better.
Okay. I had a question. I heard the previous program with Ed Dames.
Yes.
And there was a question raised about a connection between remote viewing and Scientology.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I have it on pretty good authority that's good information, that Ingo Swann and Pat Price were indeed high-level Scientologists.
Let's ask. Exactly right. There was a question in a previous program about remote viewing and a connection with Scientology. Are you aware of any?
Personally, I can only attest to the fact that I believe that both Pat Price and Ingo Swann and perhaps another one or two individuals within the SRI lab at the time were in fact Scientologists as well. I do know that some of them you know, declined to remain members because they didn't like it or didn't find any value to it. I would also have to say that I've known Buddhists who are also remote viewers, and so, you know.
So there is no more specific connection between Scientology and remote viewing. That's what people seem to believe, and I guess they've drawn that conclusion based on the fact that a couple were Scientologists, and that's
all.
In fact,
you know, you could really stretch and say that there's some indication that perhaps some of the techniques in Scientology might have showed up in some of the thinking of some of those individuals. But again, like I said, my thinking is heavily laden with my military background. So, you know, we are what we consume or what we do. So I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see any kind of conspiracy or anything behind the scenes or under the table.
If one mind can be said to have so much power to either perceive events or affect events, is it proper then to conclude that many minds organized together to affect an event have a greater effect?
I would say so, but again, I would have to caution against assuming that it's the sort of mental energy that's come together, or the focus that's come together to cause that. You have to also assume at the same time that a million people with thinking that something should be done are in fact going to be taking action and doing things within their life structure that will promulgate that. In other words, will sort of bring energy to that. So I'm not so sure if it's the mental energy or the actual unconscious actions that we take as a result of our convictions that might eventually bring that to fruition. It's probably a little bit of both.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Joe McGonigal and Art Bell. Hi.
Good morning, Art. This is Tim from KOGO Country.
In San Diego. Hi,
Tim. Absolutely. And I would like to ask Joe, would it be possible to get the masses of the minds together to create an experiment to prove levity is real?
Levity as in jocular?
As in levity. You know, mind over matter.
Oh, I see. As in the experiment...
Yes.
That he talked about earlier.
Yes.
I would like to see that happen. I'm not... One of the difficulties in getting millions of minds together to focus on something is getting them to all agree essentially on an absolute intent that's common among all those minds.
See, this is what we did with these weather experiments and the others, and frankly, Joe, it honestly scared me, and I began to contemplate consequences that I couldn't anticipate for doing something like that, and it stopped me, and I'm still stopped.
Well, let me suggest another alternative to you, Art. I can understand where that fear would come into play, but isn't it a worse case scenario to live your life in a world that where, you know, sort of coordinated action can make changes, and where we choose to ignore that possibility and just sort of go along for the ride?
Absolutely so. Yes, you're absolutely correct. But I still think there's a should be a cautionary note here that it might have consequences that you wouldn't expect that would be negative. And I just would like to be more sure of what I'm doing before I proceed. And I'm not sure how I get to that point where I'm sure enough to proceed.
Well, you can put it in a context that's more positive. For instance, if you're proposing to change weather to water crops, then the intent there is a positive and constructive one, and I can't imagine that weather would occur that would create damage or destructive results. In other words, it's all part of the same intent.
Well, right. Hold on, Joe. We're at the top of the hour. It's all part of the same intent, but inevitably, then, there are destructive weather things that have occurred in areas that we've concentrated on, and believe me, we get email and we get letters saying, look what you did. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.